Hello and welcome to In Focus with Insight. My name is Pamela Hillig. I'm head of Insight Life Solutions. And this is an episode of the Open Books series in which we get to know inspiring and fascinating people in the actuarial and insurance community through the books that they have read and loved. Today, I'm joined by Delisu Dube. Delisu is the founder and CEO of Lena, a licensed life microinsurer. Before that, he spent over 15 years working for some of South Africa's leading short-term insurers. Outside of his corporate career, Delisu has 9 years' worth of experience as an entrepreneur. His actuarial training has put him in good standing to be involved in roles such as building pricing models, fraud prediction models, and data analytics. In his spare time, Delisu enjoys reading, of course, traveling, and spending quality time with his family. Welcome to the podcast, Delisu.
Thanks, Pam. Thank you for the invite. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And so you say you enjoy reading. Would you classify yourself as a reader with a capital R?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the things that I've always enjoyed. I think reading takes you, to places that you're not physically there. But as you're reading, you actually go to the place. And yeah, that's my fascination. So I'm a reader with a capital R. I think obsessive sometimes.
So we might see you on BookTok or Bookstagram or BookTube one of these days.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'm glad you classify yourself as a reader because this interview is probably a bit different from other podcasts you might have seen, and that we will talk about you and your career and the things you're passionate about, but with the added angle of the books that have shaped you in some way. So you can think of it as the Desert Island Discs for bibliophiles. But before we get into the books, tell me, what is currently keeping you busy?
So we run, like you mentioned, we run an insurance company, and we founded it and it's licensed by the Reserve Bank under the PA. So we are spending most of my time, actually a lot of my time, just getting the business up and running, making sure that you're growing, because there's a lot of aspects of the business that you need to look at. We look at now, governance issues, is your board good, capital issues, do you have enough capital to, obviously, pay claims as they arrive, also operational matters. So putting that together has been a lot of work, actually a lifetime of work. It's been a huge learning curve, but I've loved it because it's just about more than, obviously, business is there to make profits, but I just, there's a sense of a fulfilling a purpose, serving our customers. So that's what's been interesting about it. So yeah, that's been, yeah, what I've been doing, mainly what I've been doing from a corporate aspect, our career. And also we founded an association called MIAFA, the Microinsurance Association of South Africa. So microinsurance is a fairly new field in South Africa. So it's good to be at the forefront of that. I'm also a member of the AFA Market Insurance Committee. There we talk mostly about technical aspects. If you look at the prudential standards and the FSN, they talk about, technically how to reserve and all that. So we actually, through AFA, we communicate with the regulators. So just what's best to reserve, the best way to reserve, especially for microinsurers, which is a new sort of licensing category.
I'm very interested to get, when we talk a bit more about, your background and everything, I'm very interested to hear more about your passion for microinsurance, because I know you are an experienced entrepreneur, but I feel like starting an insurance company is probably the most difficult way to make
Absolutely.
Money. So there's probably something more. There's probably a deeper purpose behind that, which I'm excited to hear more about.
Oh, yeah, no, I have to.
So, just as a warm-up to get into the books we're going to talk about and that you brought along, I'm curious to find out a bit about your reading habits. What kind of genres do you enjoy reading?
So, I'd like to think that my reading is a bit varied, very topic leadership, psychology. I like reading about actually our own industry. A little bit of history, and I tend to also just read, daily read newspapers, so it covers everything, what's happening in the country, from, like I mentioned, from the business perspective. So it's, yeah, varied topics, but it's mostly around business and leadership.
Do you ever read fiction or not?
No. I've actually, yeah. So some other fellow readers, they try to stay me into reading fiction. I'll try it, but I don't actually. So it's more nonfiction. And I can hear that the people that I talk to, they speak with sort of amazement in terms of, you know, how fiction is interesting. So nah, but it's definitely something that I'll try, because it looks like the people who do read find it fascinating. And I can imagine, like I mentioned, when you read, you get to travel.
Do you think fiction readers and nonfiction readers have different relationships with reading?
I don't think from a vision, no, I wouldn't think so. I think if you love reading, you love reading, right? It's not a topic matter, just like you love reading. So a reader tend to read, or if a reader tend to read quite a lot of topics.
So where did your love of reading start? Was reading a big thing in your household growing up?
Yes and no, actually. I remember my grandmother loved reading. So, and I think for me it was more, just inborn thing. Just I loved books at school. And I remember at what called now grade six, without revealing my age, I got a prize actually for coming first in grade six. There was a book called Tell Me Why. It was a very thick book, a lot of questions. And I think that's when I realized.
That book.
Yes. I wonder, yeah. I, actually, interestingly, I'm trying to find it now. Yeah, I put it. A future of lottery. But it was a book about just facts. And you know, it just created curiosity in your mind, like how things work, you know, and the reason for things. So I think then, this is the earliest memory of me just realizing that this was actually quite fun. Besides, you know, doing math sums and stuff. So I started reading quite early.
So you love books as objects. You also love, do you like going into bookshops? What's your favorite bookshop to go to?
So yeah, exclusive books. So luckily I've made sure that I live a walking distance to a bookshop. I have very close, very exclusive books, very close. So my, generally Sundays, I tend to just take a stroll. So you're doing two things. You're almost exercising and then just go and sit, have a coffee and read. So I enjoy that. You typically find the afternoon.
They say that property prices go up when a Woolworths or maybe a 24 Woolworths pops up in that neighborhood. So maybe it should rather be if there's a bookshop in the neighborhood for readers.
Yeah, no, they should. Yeah, no, absolutely. It should. I mean, I'd even take it as far as saying, you know, all the books you read, that should be on your CV, right? I think obviously, provided that you've applied whatever's taught, because it's educational.
I'm thinking if I can put, you know, the Twilight series on my CV, sure, I learned something from me. okay, so let's get into the books. What's the first one we're going to talk about today?
The first book is actually one of my favorite business books. And it actually caught me by surprise, because I've read a few autobiographies, but nothing came close to it. The first book is a book by Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, as you know him. And it's called Shoe Dog. You'll see the swoosh there. It's a phenomenal book. It talks about starting a business. You know, it talks about the hardship of a business. It talks about, you know, talks about his travel escapade, and how the different places go to, like a place called Kobe in Japan, and how later on in his entrepreneurial journey he does a deal with Kobe Bryant, the infamous NBA player who's popped on sadly. And the book just delves into just coincidences. So the one main thing I remember about the book, it questions, you know, coincidences. Are they really coincidences, or are they random as we think, or is it something that's meant to happen? So the book really talks to that things happen maybe according to a plan. When it happens, it looks like a coincidence, but it isn't. So and then the book also talks about family. I think his father gave him seed funding, and you know, how family plays an important role, especially as your early investors. And you know, I think the stories of the likes of Jeff Bezos, that his parents were his sort of first investors, his early shareholders. So talk about family. It talks just about the hardships of you know, a business. I think there is part of the book where he talks about him, you know, his burn rate on the cash was like quite high, and he had a few plans to pay salary. So this is typically what you know, entrepreneurs sometimes go to, especially in the early days. And if you look at Nike now, I mean, it's a fascinating brand, fascinating business. But then again, it links to a purpose. You'll go through all these ups and downs in business, but I think if your North Star, what's guiding you, is bigger than the challenges that you face, you're on the right track. But challenges do happen. And I think my view, and I think the book speaks to it, and my view that the challenges is what actually makes you great. And so for anyone wishing to be very successful, I can't wish you anything more than more problems. Because if you're able to solve those problems, you become great. So, and it also speaks to failure. I think people tend to shy away from failing. Failure is actually an integrated part of being great and being successful. It just gives you a different view, perspective. So, it's been a great book. It was very relevant. And also when you read, like I mentioned, when you read, you start picturing things, right? Where he was when this happened. And when you start your own business, when you go through those things, you just remember that, this is a temporary problem. We just need to find a solution to it. So it's been, that's one of my best reads by far. And I think Nike is a well-known brand. And when you see how it just started, and to where it is now, and the history of the logo itself, that infamous Nike brand. So it was, very relevant, very insightful book.
I'm interested in your entrepreneurship journey, which you say you've kind of been involved in entrepreneurship for around 9 years. So how did that come about? Can you maybe, what do you have in common with Phil Knight? What have some of your challenges been?
Yeah. Just an entrepreneur. It's been an interesting journey. So having worked in corporate, some of some of the leading short-term insurers, I think the journey started in one of the insurance companies. We were an actuarial division, so I was an actuarial analyst there. And you just start seeing beyond, the numbers. The numbers was good, crunch numbers, build models. But you start seeing beyond, and then you start realizing, okay, there's reinsurance, there's internal audits. I think maybe my curiosity then is like, how do these things fit in together just to, ultimately to serve clients and ultimately to make a profit? So that's where I think the curiosity started. And then I went further on, worked for other insurance companies. And then 2015, decided to go on my own, but it was actually outside of financial services insurance. So we started, we're going to build an Amazon. That's what we called ourselves. It was myself and two other founders. One guy was, sales. The other guy was IT. So we had started. I was going to bring in sort of the analytics, serving customers the best way possible, right? But unfortunately, there was one of the founders had an unfortunate event that happened in their life, and sort of the business slowed down. So we actually dismantled the business. No love lost. We had a nice shareholders agreement. And then I reflected and I thought, look, I cut my teeth in financial services insurance, so let me go back. So started there, with just the regulatory licenses. I think the first one was through the FSCA. As you know, that financial services is highly regulated in South Africa. What reason, right? And I think both the sister regulators speak to the same thing, that protection of customers, which is a strong value of ours as a micro insurer. To say we always have to put the customer first. So we started that with the FSCA, that they look at more conduct of financial institutions. And then we got that license in I think around 2019. And then we said to the license, and I thought, what do we do? Either become a broker, we do a sell captive arrangement. And apologies to non-insurance people with all this jargon. Do a sell captive, or just have our own license. So I think we are crazy enough and bold enough to say, look, let's go for an insurance license of our own. I think part of the decision was driven by just us leaving a legacy, right? I'm a big believer that your purpose, why you're on this earth, you should be able to help people or build things that will, be long after you're gone, still be talked about. So that was part of the reason why we thought, okay, let's be bold and start a micro insurance company, an insurance company. So that happened. We started the application around the time COVID hit. It was around the 2020. Because in between that, we actually had spoken to a few of the cell captive providers. So we got enough information to make a decision that's informed. And then after that, we decided we're not going to go to cell captive route. We're going to go apply for our own license. So COVID was a bad time, right? I think we all remember it. I think from a mortality point of view, and also interestingly, we were starting a sort of a life micro insurer, so we had to be careful of our timing because there was a time obviously mortality worsened, but it happened during that time. And as Martin was a difficult time, I think even personally for people staying at home and not being able to do things, it was actually an interesting time because as we're applying, we are actually able to have better access to people. So through what we're doing now, I think we're having a virtual interview, right? So you are easily able to get very influential people. So it was a bad time, but there was a positive spin-off. And I think that's why we progressed. We're able to, obviously applications done online. And it was a tough process because our regulators are tough. They want to make sure that you stick. They want to make sure that, your board is sound, you've got enough capital, your operations are good, policy wording, right? So that happened, eventually got that license end of 2021, which is, an amazing milestone. And also to the Reserve Bank's credit, the regulators, the FSC, are also involved. I think the microinsurance licensing category was introduced, obviously, to push transformation. To make sure that we have enough Black entrepreneurs going to financial services, so that was an amazing milestone. Also from a transformation point of view, and then fast track to now, you start building a team, you're putting your operations together, the next thing is you're getting your first premium, right? Which is such an amazing feeling.
When did that happen? How long between ideating and the first premium?
I'll say from licensing to first premium was about 6 months. So because remember, as you're applying, you're actually and again, I think this is how the Reserve Bank or the regulator structure that as you are going through the application, you're actually getting a lot of things together because they do ask you what IT systems, how do they work, what are you paying for it, because they get involved in everything. So in a way, as you're going through the application process, you're actually setting up the business. Yeah, so the time that you're licensed, you're actually fully paid. So it's not a lot of time that you take before you then, because you're almost like 90% set up, and then you start getting the premium, and then you start building the team and finding the right partners. And as an insurer, obviously we also rely on our bigger brothers, the reinsurers, to help us sort of manage our risk, diversify our risk. It's been a fascinating journey. I think entrepreneurship, in all honesty, is hard, but you get closer to the sense of feeling that you're living your purpose. And I think more than anything, it's about your purpose. It's about serving others. That's what I believe leadership is about. Serving others in the time of need. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey. It's been tough, but I think we appreciate the challenging times because even as they happen. It's once you find a solution to them, it takes you to the next level. And the next level it's got its own set of challenges. So I think you have to get used to it. But it's been good. It's been, I've enjoyed it. I'm still enjoying it. But entrepreneurship is, when I look back, and say, would I do this, knowing what I know now, and absolutely. Absolutely yes. With all the challenges, because the challenge is what take you to the next step, especially if you're able to solve them. But I also do think that it's important that in the beginning you're delusional. You can't know everything about what you're going to go through, because I do think that they're probably going to be a high percentage or high number of people who are ready to start business, a high proportion of people who are ready to start businesses. But they, because they know that, you know, the benefit of hindsight, they probably might not. But again, I think it's when you look at the challenge you go through versus, you know, the spin-offs, so the positives far outweigh the challenges. But I think knowing us as human beings, we tend to focus on the negative and amplify this. So I do think
suspicious actuaries.
Yeah. I do think in the beginning. But actually you manage the risk. So it's even better because the negatives, you're able to manage them. But for us as normal human beings, we coded to amplify challenges and just think, oh, I'm not doing this. So there is, you know, part of, you know, in the beginning, you have to be a little delusional, you know, and it kind of, you know, you view a calculation, but at some point you have to take a bit of a risk, you know, a leap of faith, even if the numbers, they might make sense, they might not, but there has to be something, you know, bigger, obviously driving you. So that's been, that's been the journey.
I like what you say about getting used to challenges, because I think that's what it is. The more challenges you face and you overcome them, then it builds your confidence and you'll meet new challenges, but you have this confidence that you'll be able to get through.
Absolutely.
So you kind of, that's how you get used to it.
Absolutely. So that's been a journey in a nutshell, in terms of, but like I said, it links quite nicely with having read the book, You Dog. I just remembered as you go through certain things that, oh, okay, this was this part, but linking it. Now, the relevance is actually quite fascinating to say. And then you realize, like, you know what? Most entrepreneurs go through this. You know, I think when it's your first time, you get shunned. But it's just, and then you start now seeing the relevance of the challenge in the business. Like, these are the stepping stones to taking the business to the next level.
Do you have a favorite quote from the book that you can share with us?
So there's not a quote, say, but it was a question that got me thinking. Are coincidences really coincidences? But then again, I think what that links to is, you know, because Phil Knight has traveled, right? It's also about just take action, you know, take action and the world will work around you. You know, take action, things happen. But I think that the thing that stuck with me, and we you know, experiences in our journey, that the things that happen that you think, is this really a coincidence? But you also get a feeling that maybe this was meant to happen, you know. So that's not a quote per se, but it's just a question that, you know, are certain things really coincidences or are they meant to happen?
Yeah, and as you say, it's sometimes you can see that very clearly with the benefit of hindsight. But when you're going through it, it's so difficult to to keep that
that's
in mind.
True. That's true.
So what's the next book we're going to talk about?
So the next book we're going to talk about, it's a book by Heather Hughes called First President. The book is about the life and times of one of the founders of the African National Congress. As you know, the ANC is one of the biggest revolutionary parties in on the continent. So he was one of the founders. His name is Dr. John Langalibalele Dube.
Any relation? I have to ask.
I believe there is, but after my current parents, there is, but it's quite distant. But I think besides, I think the relational aspect of the book, you might even think that it's actually political. It actually isn't. It speaks to just, you know, so for Dr. J.L. Dube, he founded, one of the founders of the ANC, he founded a school in KZN called Orsange. The school still exists. And he also founded a publication called Ilanga La Natal. So all the institutions that he founded till this day, I mean, I think he lived in the 1880s and died in the 1940s, somewhere there. And what is fascinating is that just the journey of, you know, how he founded all these institutions, how they you know, they still this day as we speak, they still exist. That for me, that read was fascinating because it like Shoot Dog, it talks through, you know, what he went through, you know, trying to raise funding to fund the school. Right? The school was very much about self-sufficiency, right? So they would teach, you know, woodwork, carpentry. So, which is something that's, you know, quite interesting in education because, it, you know, education these days about theory. There's no element of, you know, doing practicals, even at high school, you know. But if you leave, imagine leaving matric with a skill in carpentry, you know what that does for your career. So he was more about that, that kind of education. And also, you know, he speaks of his, the book speaks of his mentor, a guy called Booker T. Washington. So he'd fly, and I mean, imagine back then, in the dark days of South Africa, you know, flying through the US trying to raise funding. So, I mean, it's also, you know, speaks to the things that, you know, are challenges that seem impossible. But once you get to them, and so he was able to raise some funding for the school. So I think, yeah, an inspiration, really, reading the book. I've read it twice, and also speak to, you know, the journey of, I think the journey of life as well, the journey of entrepreneurship, because you're always swimming against the tide, and how you overcome those things, what makes you exceptional. And also speaks to, yeah, like mentorship, you know, the book write quite a lot about Booker T. Washington, who was a sort of mentor there in the US, and how mentorship plays a part in shaping, you know, who you are and how you grow, how you develop. So the book speaks quite well on quite at length about just finding a mentor, someone who's been there, done that, who's got a lot more gray hair than you, who can guide you through some of the challenges. But it just helps you.
Do you have a mentor for yourself?
Yes, I do. I do. So in my corporate career, I had like a formal meet every 2 months. But now what I do is I have a few people that I bounce things off, who've been there, done that. So you just pick up a phone, have a lunch, and then tell them what you're going through. And it's been interesting because, you know, every time you a little bit freaked out about what's happening, and you know, and you always bring to someone who come, and you know, some of the mentors, they just smile and look at you in a bit of a panic, but because they've got the wisdom, they've been through all these things, right? And it's amazing the nuggets of wisdom you pick up. Just someone saying one thing, is like, try this, and then it just your world is different. So mentorship is extremely important. So I've got a few people that I call, and we have a lunch, and we just sometimes give them. It's not always bad news, by the way. So we have a lunch to say we did this. It's exciting. It's a great milestone in the business. So that book speaks to that. And also, I think what sticks, or what I've enjoyed about the book is it's about also fulfilling your purpose in life. And leaving a legacy, you know, while you're still on this earth, and building things that help society. And even when you're not there, they still continue to serve society.
And that, purpose and building a legacy, you've kind of alluded to the work you're doing now as fulfilling that. Can you maybe talk a bit about what microinsurance is for those who, I think we have a very niche audience, so everyone probably knows what it is, but in case people don't know what it is, and then perhaps how it kind of fits into your purpose and your desire to leave a legacy. Yes.
So microinsurance is a new, why say it's a new industry in South Africa, because the regulators started issuing the license. I think the Insurance Act was promulgated in 2018, I think, 2017. So it's a new license category from a regulatory perspective. So microinsurance speaks to, as you've seen in South Africa, right? The lower elephant, the lower end of the market, the insurance penetration is low, because, right? Products are either too expensive, and you're middle to upper, the market saturated, because, obviously economic standing and so forth. So what microinsurance solves for is in the lower end of the market, right? You give your customer there, products that suit their pocket and suit their need. So it's more at a lower end of the market to make sure that the products you offer there are cost effective, and also over and above funeral products, because funeral products sell quite well in South Africa. So you want to take it beyond funeral, and you want to offer a life, innovative life product that suits the need of that market. So hence, this is what microinsurance are. I think microinsurance in South Africa and all over the world, that's what it solves for, products designed for, the lower end of the market that are cost effective.
How does the regulation enable that? Is there, less red tape so that you can offer cost effective solutions, or why doesn't everyone do it?
Yeah. So what the regulator tried to do is make So some of the requirements, they're stringent. So there's less, it's less onerous on your governance. It's less onerous on your capital requirements versus the traditional insurance. And also the cover levels are limited. So as opposed to the traditional life insurance companies. And so it's actually geared at, because of the low sum insurance, geared at the lower end of the market, the lower LSM, because then by imputation, then a lower sum insured would result in a lower premium. So in general, it's meant to be, less stringent regulatory, and lower cover limits yet for that market.
I guess it doesn't feel that way when you're going through all the paperwork and the applications.
Definitely not. I think it's a good entry into sort of financial services, because then it highlights what you need to look out for as a business. So as much as regulators are tough, they actually help us to think about our business in a very in a sustainable way, right? I think you remember some of our theory in terms of probability of ruin. Remember just studying that and then actually seeing it now come to light that those things are true. Holding enough capital, you'll be able to, or reserves, you'll be able to fulfill your obligations to your customers. So that's why regulation comes in, to reduce some of our probability of ruin. But yeah, it is this stringent. But you do feel that the regulators, I think, at some point treat everyone the same, because you're all liable to the same customer, right? So it's in some instances, like the other one is actually your control function. So as an insurer, by regulation, you need to have control functions. So for the traditional insurers, there's four of them, and then for the micro insurers, there's two. And then I'll mention the micro insurance one is you need to appoint an internal auditor that's approved by the regulator, and also you need to approve what's called a head of actuarial function, that's approved by the regulator as well. So even from a control perspective, it's less stringent, and both those control functions report to the board. And also, governance, which is something that I'd been exposed to, sort of my corporate career, was sort of on sort of divisional board. But now you're seeing, as you learn, you realize it's so important to have a sound board, to have a well-experienced board. And I think we're very lucky to have the quality of board members that we have, and also independent, right? I remember when you apply, the I was talking to one the one person with the facility, and they say the governance, ultimately you can't mark your own homework, right? You need other people to contribute. So it speaks to teamwork and so forth.
Yeah, governance I find so fascinating because how do you find people to sit on your board that know more, are wise enough to make decisions that you, who's, running the business every day, may not be able to make, So as you said, it's so important to select the appropriate and appropriately qualified board members, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and also just making sure, yeah, the right people. Because sometimes you might lack a certain skill, right? And then the other board members will complement, will have the complementary skill. And I've always believed this. It doesn't matter how brilliant or amazing you are, as a single human being, you'll come up with the most amazing idea. But you always do need other people to actually improve that idea. Because I think as human beings, you tend to have this bias of holding on to things because you came up with it. No one can interrogate it. But it
Yeah.
actually, as it gets interrogated by the team members, it gets better. So that's why governance is so
100%.
important. Yeah.
100%. So how does you having established this micro insurer feed into your purpose, do you think?
It's simple. It's also about just learning. I think on a personal level, it's about learning, appreciating the value other people add. And also outside of serving your customers, serving others, right? And making sure even within your establishment, you're helping others, your team, just get better. You move the stumbling blocks out of the way. You try your best, So it serves a purpose in just serving others. Serving others, whether it's your customers, or your staff, in so many ways, and your partners. And I mean, I think some of the other work that we do. We've partnered up with this Stockfell Academy. It's more like more on the Stockfell arena, It's sort of a the lady who runs it calls it the give, you know, because she runs like educational material to stoppers to teach them about, you know, financial services and financial literacy. So that's also we partner up with the Luxury Institute, which is just to push financial education. And I, you know, for me, I actually grew up wanting to be a teacher. I do get excited when I see something about education. So that's how it feeds into sort of the purpose, just, you know, imparting knowledge and helping other people to be better from a financial standpoint and also from a knowledge standpoint.
Great. What's the next book we're going to talk about?
So the next book, I don't have it here. It's actually a book by Eric Ries. It's called The Lean Startup. Fascinating book because it talks... Ah, thank
there
you, Pam.
Go.
Thank you. Ah, thank you. Thank you.
Visual aids.
yes, it helps. Yeah. So it talks to how to build lean, right? Startup business, it talks about just whatever product you're offering, build it small. Don't waste a lot of resources and money and time. Build it small. Take it to market as quickly as possible. Get the feedback. They call it, Eric Ries calls it validated learning. See what the customers saying and feel about your product. So and pivot. So that's how we try to build Lena. So actually, coincidentally, that's where the name came from. Called the Lean Startup. And the theory is actually amazing because we try to follow it as sort of me and the rest of the team as best as you can, and realize that. When the time comes to partner, either with people or, you know, an equity partner, they actually, you know, the potential equity partner values that you've kept lean, and the leaner you are, the more agile you are, right? As opposed to having, you know, built this massive team and then you go through the downturn of the economy and then now you have to lay off people. So you have to be very careful and build lean and add on as, you know, on the product itself and also on the business, add on as you grow. It also talked about what's called a minimum viable product. So they suggest that just take that, call it an MVP, take that prototype of your product and you know, and send it to market as it is, right? But we've added sort of our own twist to the MVP. So we call it an MLP, minimum lovable product. So when you build products, remember that your customers must have an obsession with your product. So that because that's what's gonna make a customer pay for you, or get their hard earned money, give their hard earned money to you. It's because it must be because they love something about your product. So the like I mentioned, the other interesting lesson is validated learning. It's not hypothesis, it's not theory, but it's about saying this is what's happened now. Here's the customer feedback, and now you're learning. It's validated, right? And you can take that forward without even, because I think what I've seen, without even hypothesizing, what I've seen also, I'm also guilty of in the corporate world when we sit there and with the product developers, underwriters, or the actuaries, and we just, you know, come up with this amazing product, you know, and think, yes, you know, we've nailed it, right? And the mistake we made, and I think I'm seeing it now, is that we didn't have a few of our customers in that brainstorming session to say, oh, this is my experience of your product, and this is why I'd like to, you know, like change, and so it speaks to that have your customers in mind as you pivot your product, you know, and I like one of the quotes. I think it was Jeff Bezos who says that, you know, one of the biggest assets in your business are your most disgruntled customers, because they'll tell you what's wrong with your product, and if they're going to be defensive about it because you are sitting in this room and you thought. You just designed the most amazing thing without even testing it with your customers, you know. Or you say, okay, this is actually valuable. Let's pivot to product. That's how the product gets better.
How do you make an insurance product, you know, lovable? How do you differentiate, you know, from all the others?
You know, the talent you have. I think you know the talent you have is being the insurance industry is inherently a product garage purchase, right? And even some of our target markets, they call it a should you die product. You know, it's always associated with like fear and all those things.
Death,
but I think
illness. All the things going wrong.
Illness, very, very morbid, you know, all things going wrong.
Yeah.
But I think
Yeah.
you have to position it in a way that insurance is not necessarily there when things get tough. You know, insurance also supports your life, right? So you have to find a way that the product must speak to how does it benefit you as you're alive, right? It could be in the form of rewards, and you've seen like a move towards some of the insurers going to, you know, the rewards aspect of things. But it cannot be just solely on that unfortunate event happening, because it's got to serve a purpose while you're alive, right? So it's important that even in the microinsurance space, which we'll talk about just now, we are looking at, because regulation doesn't allow a sort of savings product for microinsurers, we're looking at, let's include a savings product, because it would be good for a customer to see, even on an app, to see, okay, here's my funeral cover, here's my life product, but here's the savings element of it, that if I keep, it just keeps growing. You know, so some insurance corner needs to speak to also the positive, which is while you're living, what happened before you're disabled, before you have, you know, critical illness, what happened, type of thing. So we are actually in we've got a brainstorm and sort of a session next week on a product development of the product development team to talk about those issues or those how we can just make sure the product speaks to not only the adverse experiences or what life can throw at you, but also while you're alive, what happened.
Talking about, you know, developing microinsurance industry and making changes and making it better. You mentioned earlier that you were one of the founders of the Micro Insurance Association of South Africa, MIASA, and you're a member of ASA's Microinsurance Committee. So, can you tell me about how the MIASA Association came about and what you guys do?
Yes, it was myself and two other colleagues. We were, because microinsurance from a regulatory perspective is a new licensing category, we thought we'd be sort of the voice for the industry itself, the new industry, which is always exciting, with the regulators. So we've had our first few engagements, which are quite fruitful with the regulators in terms of, you know, just for them to get a sense of this new licensing category, what's been the experience. And I think credit to the regulators, they've been very open to our feedback. To say, look, this has worked well, this hasn't worked well. How do you make sure the things that haven't worked well going forward become better? So we effectively a mouthpiece to the industry, both from a customer and the industry, so microinsurers themselves perspective. And if you can think of the old Life, LOA, Life Officers Association, and what's called now, I think a CISA. So the group of life insurers that talk about, you know, life insurance, matters and industry. That's sort of still in infancy. We're making good progress though.
Amazing. What's the fourth book you have today?
The fourth book I have is actually very interesting. It's a kiddie's book.
This is the one I was most excited about.
It's written by a guy called Dr. Seuss. I think he's a psychologist, so he writes a kiddie's book. But it took me by complete surprise. It's like a 50-pager short read. It's a poem, actually. And I found myself moved emotionally, right? And it just evokes so many emotions, because it talks about life. It talks about resilience. It talks about, how to go through the ups and downs. You know, it's quite ironic that a kiddie's book would do that to an adult, right?
I think it does it more often than you would think, eh?
It was quite an impactful short read. And they talk
so,
about...
So the name of that book was?
The name of the book is yes. All the Places You'll Go. You just hear the name, it's just very funky. And it talks to that. Just life. Yes, and look, I mean, visually, you can see it's a kiddie's book, right?
Yeah.
But it is such a short, impactful read about life, you know, the ups and downs of life, like I mentioned. And when you stagnate, keep going. It's very well written, I must say, because it's written like a kiddie's book, but it speaks to just life. And you can relate to that doubt. With the book.
I feel like you must have a quote from this one.
So yeah, there's a quote from this one. It's very simple. Very simple, like I said. It says you have brains in your head, you have feet in your shoes, you can see yourself in any direction you choose. It's and because it's a poem, it rhymes as well, like a poem. And but the message is so powerful. It just talks to just your ability that, you have choices, you have chances and choices in life, and it's all up to you, And it says brains in your head, right? And it really says you are capable. You're more than capable, because you'd expect the author of the poet to say you have a brain, right? It says you have brains in your head, so you're more than capable. Go out there and change the world. It really, yeah, it really moved me, I must say. And and I think it's good for people who don't necessarily enjoy reading. That's why
Kim.
sometimes I do like short, impactful reads, because it's just, for someone doesn't like reading, they'll miss out on a book like this, right? And it's a book, and you can read anytime, right? If you're going through something, it's a poem, it just reminds you, keep going,
So did you come across this book as an adult, or did you also know
As
it
an
when you were a
adult, yeah.
child? How
As an
did you,
adult.
how did it come into your life?
I think I was listening to a podcast, and then someone mentioned the book. That's how I came across it. And yeah, so there's one other things that you have. So I enjoy like podcasts of various people. I'm fascinated by how people think and what people have gone through and the experiences and how they overcome it. So just one of those podcasts, and then this book came out, and they spoke about it. And it was like, I got hold of it and I read it. I was like, geez, what a fascinating, short, impactful read. And it also talks to resilience, right? That things don't work out sometimes. It's okay. It's a part of life. So I think after, yeah, it's one of the books that I think everyone should read it, because it's also, even if you don't love reading, it's a short poem, impactful. It's very colorful, right? Some of the pages, like the color animal, typical kiddies book, right? But very fascinating, very fascinating. I was amazed at how the impact it had. That short read, how much it just had an impact, and it's very, yeah, it gets it. It's very emotional. It touches a bit of your emotion, which is good.
You mentioned you heard about this book on a podcast. Where do you generally get your reading recommendations from, or your book recommendations?
But I thought firstly just going to the bookshop. I'll see what's interesting, because they'll always have. Bestsellers, look at that. Sort of a good source of inspiration. Or just go on the internet and say best entrepreneurship books. So it's more about, I would like to sort of, I'm in the mood to read something like this, and then search for it.
Okay.
And then in a podcast, then you hear about a book. And then you just waste your, curiosity, and then you go and get it.
Do you like reading on Kindle or physical book, or do you like audiobooks? What's your preferred medium?
So I, my first preference is the hard copy. Like
Okay.
it's hard copy. But I think I find that when I travel, I do enjoy sort of reading on the iPad, or
Okay.
I do, because yeah, it's just easier than carrying a physical. But my first preference is the physical book, or then either online or on a tablet, and then audiobooks. Interestingly, I haven't listened to an audiobook. I haven't tried it. I prefer to sort of look at the words, make sense of them, look at how a sentence, how an author phrases sentences. And also, you know how a word is spelled by looking at it, right? You know what it means. If you don't know, you look at the dictionary. So I find that I enjoy that more than, because also as you read, you can improve your reading speed, right? With full comprehension. Right, and you get better at it.
What's the last book we're going to talk about today?
The last book is a book by one of my favorite authors, Malcolm Gladwell, A True Contrarian. It's called David and Goliath. It's also about misfits, and underdogs. Yes, and the art of battling giants. The book is fascinating because it talks about a biblical story of, the David versus Goliath story, and he talks about the advantages of disadvantages, right? So if you look at that fight in David Goliath was huge. You know, the armor around him and yeah, David's small with a sling, right? But then the size, David's size, small, et cetera, was actually an advantage because he was able to be more agile, and using a sling, he was able to defeat Goliath. Right? And he talks equally about the gigantic size of Goliath, was actually their disadvantage, right? So sometimes the advantage can be a disadvantage because it was huge, massive, and that also in terms of like how he grew, it affected his eyesight. So that's the same, you know, advantage seemingly that you have as being huge, the same thing that affected the eyesight. And obviously the armor that he's wearing that weighs heavy on him. So it makes a good case of what we typically call a blessing in disguise. So some of the things that you go through in life are there to actually help you, but we don't see it like that. So it's been a fascinating, and also speaks, a fascinating book. Also speaks to how I think about things, right? I generally do believe that even before reading the book. So I've had this very odd experience of, growing up and believing in things, not having read them anyway. And then when you start reading, it's like, oh, there's someone who also thinks like this, right? Because I've always believed that, you know, even sometimes, you know, the cards you dealt with, sometimes are not favorable, but they serve a purpose to take you to the next level. But we don't feel like we're human beings, and something bad happens, we just go get depressed, and you know, but we actually don't see that there is an advantage. You just have to find it. There's a seed of greatness in some of your challenges, and so the book speaks to that. And I think it's nicer now to articulate the message with a book backing me, so that I don't sound like I'm talking nonsense, you know. But it just helps you just see challenges and see the value in challenges. Malcolm Gladwell also talks about this lawyer who is dyslexic in the book, and you know, without realizing that their dyslexia helped them to listen better, right? So he was able to win court cases because he was able to listen better, even listen to a tone, in someone speaking, and that helped him. It helped someone who's able to,
wow,
like read or write. So that that seeming disadvantage actually helped them to become better. But a typical human being will see that as a stumbling block, as a challenge, without realizing that this is how actually this is something. If you use a disadvantage for you, we can actually turn them into massive advantages. And I think that we know of Richard Branson as well, very prosperous person, was also dyslexic from what I remember.
Oh, is he?
And one of the things, one of the things he says is very fascinating. That I was reading one of his books. One of the things that came out strongly that he's obviously dyslexic helped him to delegate, right? So you're able to, and which is a very critical skill in leadership, the ability to delegate, to get people who are better than you certain things to help you, right? And that honed that skill. And I know I'm also partly guilty of that, that you, as human beings, you tend to want to work in your own silo, you want to do things by yourself without realizing that there's certain things that other people are better at. And not that you're useless at them, you're good, but they're better at those things than you. Leave it to them.
And that's okay. Yeah, you can still be a leader and not be the best at everything.
It is absolutely okay. It is absolutely okay, because I think talking about leadership is a topic that I'm passionate about. So the leader you need to be okay with the fact that in an orchestra, you're just the conductor. You just make sure the harmonies and the instrument players will do their thing. You just need to make sure that everything's in harmony.
Such a nice way of looking at it. You know, just
give people I love
the space to excel. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. That is the book. And it speaks to a lot of, I think some of the books why I've enjoyed reading them is because it speaks to some of my beliefs I've always held. And it's also always fascinating to hear sort of someone with an unpopular view that holds true. Because, right, I think sometimes we can believe in things that are not true. And I think it's also true for, you know, the challenges we all go through challenges in life. But how you frame things is important, and how your approach to to things is important. You know, problems are not just problems. They're there to sometimes, if you look deeper, to take you to the next level, to your level of success. And I think the common theme amongst all these books, interesting, I was thinking about it as I was preparing for this interview. I thought this is like the common theme that, you know, you go through challenges in life and they can, those challenges can be, if you look at them with a different eye and frame them differently, that could be your next sort of stage of success.
And yeah, I can also see clearly from, you know, this conversation how each of these books could apply to, you know, to your work and your life and your purpose. So I think you've chosen a very representative sample. I'll quickly read the list of books. So we had Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, The First President by Heather Hughes, The Lean Startup by Eric Ries, Oh, the Places You'll Go, Dr. Seuss, and David versus Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell. Now, if I had to be very cruel and send you to a desert island with only one of these books, which one would it be?
Oh, the Places You'll Go. Without a doubt.
Good answer. Good answer.
Without a
Great.
Doubt.
Now, I have a gift for you to say thank you for being on the podcast today. And I can't believe how appropriate it is given everything you've been saying. And I'm wondering if there's any chance you haven't read it because it's exactly the message you've been giving today. And, it's called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
You
haven't? And it's exactly what you've been saying about how you should, you know, you use the challenges and the things that you think are going wrong to level up and to succeed. So I'm not a big nonfiction reader, specifically like business books, but this was a gift from Barry, my boss. I really enjoyed it and made me think of things differently. So when I'm in Joburg again, I'll give you this copy of the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tim. You just spoke to exactly what I said. So
exactly.
It's like a wow moment for me because it's just having a certain belief and then you saying now there's a book that gives you all these things. So I'm always fascinated to say, oh, okay. It just validates your thinking. Even if your thinking was just like from sometimes how you feel, it's not like based on in theory. So I look forward to reading 100%. It. Thank you for the gift. Thank you for
the
gift.
I mean, I'm sure you'll read anecdotes in there that you'll think, oh, I'm already doing this. So I must be on the right track.
That's actually one of the reasons why I enjoy reading. It's relevant to you, what you're doing. You know, and your belief.
So where can people get hold of you if they want to follow your journey or learn more about Lena or microinsurance?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, Stanley Fudube. I'm not too prominent on the social media space, but I'm available through emails. And we also got a Lena Insurance LinkedIn page. They can follow me there. And then can use my emails as the best I can do. Dalifudube at lina.fiodazere. So it's DALISUDUVE at LINAR.CO.ZERE.
Any last thoughts you'd like to leave for the audience?
So that's thanks. Thanks for the invite. I really appreciate it. I think for me, last comment is if there's anybody out there who's got a wild dream of changing the world. You know, the best thing you could ever do yourself. I want to link it back to you know, the payoff line of the first book. Just do it. You know, it's amazing how much, you know, just taking the first step is just determined everything. So I think the best thing you could do for yourself, if you want to change the world, just to take the first action. And also speaks to another book I was reading that we'll talk about in another session. Called Optimal. It just speaks to that. So start the thing that if you want to take action, sometimes, you know, you can sort of delay things, but take the first action and preferably do something that you enjoy as the first action, you know, that takes care of everything. So if you're out there with a dream, not necessarily about entrepreneurship, but whatever dreams you have in your life, whatever aspirations, work towards them. Take the first action. Make that call if you need to speak to someone. So just do it. So you started off with the Nike book. We're ending off with the Nike slogan. It wasn't planned.
I love that. It's very poetic. Thank you so much, Talisu. It's been amazing.
Thanks,